Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
Getting you set for another Festivus season, you're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Christmas, Christmas time is here, and Christmas songs you love to hear. Thoughts of joy and hope and cheer, but mostly shopping, shopping, shopping.
Christmas, Christmas time is here, the sleigh bells and the red-nosed deer. Songs and songs we love to hear, all played 1,000 times each year.
Heard this same song 20 times, and it's only Halloween. It's not even cold outside.
Christmas, Christmas time is here, and Christmas songs you love to hear. Thoughts of joy and hope and cheer, but mostly shopping, shopping, shopping.
Christmas season starting sooner every year. It's October.
Stores with plastic Christmas trees.
Ransack the mall.
Shop until you lose your mind.
Spike the eggnog.
Sit back and watch Rudolph, Frosty,
Tiny Tim,
or Charlie Brown.
It's time.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. Happy to have everybody with us here tonight as the only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey gets set for another holiday season with all the things you hate that we played in that clip from Straight No Chaser. That's their song, The Christmas Can-Can. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Heard you survived the big city experience.
Oh, you know what? I love the train. I love the TTC. I hate Uber with every fiber of my being. I was stuck at the intersection I was telling you about for 20 minutes, and I was sitting there thinking, I just left Union Station. I should have taken the UP to get back to the airport. Because yeah. I took it to get to Union Station and then took the train to my hotel. I was like, we like stopped at Union Station because we had like a little bit of extra time, and one of the other guys was like, "Oh, I'm staying until tomorrow," and then the other person we were with lives in Toronto.
Okay, yeah.
And we're like, "Oh yeah, we'll just go for a couple drinks, and then you know we'll all like part ways and whatever." And we went and got drinks in Union Station, and I swear, like, after 5 minutes of sitting in traffic, I was like, "I should have just taken the train." Honestly, it's gonna take the same amount of time.
Well, hey, you're back, though, into small-town Winnipeg, and things are back to normal, eh? So,
exactly.
There you go. For those that are wondering, the song we're kicking off with tonight is a fun one. It describes everything, again, that people hate about the holidays. Sung by Straight No Chaser. It's called The Christmas Can-Can, and they're a professional a cappella group that formed in 1996 at Indiana University. Now, everybody goes, okay, that's kind of cool in terms of what's going on. However, they recorded a video in 1998 of a comical version of The 12 Days of Christmas. You were seeing that before the show. Those founding members all graduated in 1999, and in 2007, that 1998 video went viral on YouTube. Somebody uploaded it and put it on YouTube, and it went crazy. Mm-hmm. That led to a reunion of the founding members and a five album record deal with Atlantic Records
That's
in 2008.
Amazing. That's amazing.
For those that are wondering, the YouTube video of the 12 Days of Christmas has been viewed over 24 million times.
That's crazy.
So yeah, they're doing okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Doing okay.
That is really like the dream, right? Like you do something and then like 10 years later, it becomes super big and it like changes your life. This is like a joke video we recorded for like a random thing. Oh yeah, now you're a millionaire.
Like they were a student group that got together and just said, "Oh, we're just gonna do an a cappella group, and you know we can all sing, we can all do our stuff or whatever."
Yeah, we'll make a funny song.
Yeah, you know, we'll have some fun with it in terms of doing this Christmas medley. And all of a sudden, 10 years later, they're now five albums in.
Yeah.
The five album deal and the way they go. So
it's crazy.
Congratulations on that. So. Also want to say congrats go out to the seven new Hall of Famers that were inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. A number of big names that went in, Mike Vernon, Henrik Lundqvist, Tom Barrasso in terms of some of the players, Ken Hitchcock went in. But specifically Caroline Ouellette, who probably should have been in a long time ago considering how good she was for Canada on the women's stage for so long. Also because Caroline's a coach at Concordia University, which is awesome to see. Really disappointed in the hall, though, for not inducting Julie Chu at the same time, because that would have been a fantastic setup for those two. But hey, if you're going to break things up like that, just induct one of the Lamoureux next year and don't put both of them in.
Oh, jeez. Imagine, like, they have to know well enough to put them in at the same
really?
Time.
Because legitimately Julie Chu is still not in. Like, how dumb do you have
that's
to
true.
Be? So
this Lamoureux scored more points. She goes in first.
Like, the NHL is, or the NHL, the Hall of Fame, Hockey Hall of Fame is just so
stupid.
Yeah, it angers me every year, but whatever, that's fine. Speaking of anger me, let's get into some of the hockey stuff here, because we have lots to go over tonight. Lots of busyness to go over. The NHL finally decided to launch their NFT offerings yesterday.
What year is it?
Under the name NHL Break. Apparently it's 2020 still.
Yeah.
Where's
my mask?
Under the NHL Breakaway platform. And it seems like with most things, the NHL is 2 to 3 years behind the times. For a quick review, NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, are a form of crypto asset that is used to certify ownership and authenticity of a digital file, including an image, video, or text. Mm-hmm. So basically, if somebody wants to sell you, an NFT, you are buying a chain of numbers and letters that say you own not even a portion, you own a tiny bit of this image that they're selling you.
Yeah. To me, just before we go on,
to me, this has all of the buildings of a pyramid scheme. And I know that, again,
NFTs. That's exactly what it is.
But again, I know that NFTs have, we'll talk about some of the craziness about them in a second, but I know that NFTs were a big thing for a while. There was a number of different groups that were producing them, like, basically ad nauseum. Like, they were legitimately putting them out, like, hourly.
They were using AI to generate all of the art, and so they could put out massive collections that sold for thousands of dollars a piece. But, like, you know, when I originally first heard about it, you know, being somebody who's in, like, works in a creative space, and, you know, I know lots of filmmakers and artists and musicians and all of that, being sold that, like, oh, yeah, it would help, you know, help digital artists be able to make more money and all of that, and like be able to sell like physical, like, you know, my girlfriend's sister, she can sell one of her art pieces, like these beautiful pieces of like basically furniture that she's painted and like turned into these art pieces. You know, she could physically sell that, but she can't like easily sell the digital pieces with the same degree of exclusivity. I was like, I can kind of see it.
But my question is that how do you digitize something that's a one of a kind?
Yeah.
Because if you're selling 20 blockchains off that.
Yeah.
Is it really one of a kind after that?
It's not. That's the thing, right? Like
you're muddying the water so badly now that with what could be and not what is.
Like there are millions of photos of the Mona Lisa. There's only one physical Mona Lisa. It's a thing that can be bought and sold and stored and whatever, but all those photos can still exist. Like if you make a piece of digital art, the way that the medium operates is that it's easily replicable. It's a different market entirely, and it is just you're not buying the art. You're buying basically an entry on the blockchain that says you own the thing at this link.
But the blockchain is nothing but fake. Nothing.
Exactly.
You're not buying anything. You're just basically giving somebody money for a line of code, which means nothing.
Yeah. The craziest thing is like, would be it would be easy for like China to just take over the blockchain and steal all the money off of like everybody's wallets.
Well,
because it's done off of, you know, like it's all of the different nodes in the chain authenticating what the transaction record is. If you own 50 plus 1% of the record, and you have 51% of the record saying, actually, all of the assets are in these three accounts. Override everything.
Hold on, though. But if you lose one, because they're individual, unique chains, if you lose access to that chain, you've lost your investment.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't matter that you have a receipt for buying it. It doesn't exist anymore to anybody because they can't crack it after that.
Exactly.
So if it's that
special,
rare, that it can't be cracked by anybody else except the person who has it in their digital wallet, why would I want to trust somebody else to hold on to this?
Yeah. It was just like, it was a thing that...
Anyway.
It was a technology that, like, theoretically had applications. And I don't think it has the applications that people originally intended for it.
I don't think it has any application.
It probably has some application in some like obscure tech. Like there's probably some obscure tech problem that it's eventually going to solve. But I think that. But what happened was it turned into this wild market of speculation where people are buying in because they've got FOMO and they see other people with like making millions of dollars and it became just this frenzy built on nothing.
But I mean, that's what I mean. So it's legitimately a bubble. It's not even a bubble because
it already burst.
Right. The bubble doesn't even work in terms of how you get it. It's legitimately a Ponzi scheme.
Some of the psychos that got like super into it are now blind because they went to a music festival and they used UV lights at a music festival.
But okay. So anyway, so getting back to the NHL. So the NHL is creating these NFT collectibles, these non-fungible token collectibles under Ethereum ERC-721 standard. Now, again, that's not going to mean anything to you. It doesn't mean anything to me. Don't feel bad. It's meaningless to most people. It's legitimately just a way. It's a type of cryptocurrency that can be tracked in terms of a various different platforms. That's all it is.
Yeah, Ethereum is just one of the major like cryptocurrencies.
Right, and the ERC-721 standard is just the variation on that in terms of being a trackable. Anyway, again, meaningless for me, for you, for everybody else.
For the average consumer, it's way too
confusing. Here's where things get interesting. You were just talking about how they're meaningless. So let's get into this. Because as per The Guardian's Maya Yang, mm-hmm. she wrote on September 22nd, quote, according to a new report by Dapp Gamble that reviewed data from NFT Scan and CoinMarketCap, 69,795 out of 73,257 NFT collections have a market cap of zero Ether.
How much? How many?
69,795 out of 73,257. So again, those are numbers that people are going to, okay, like those are just big numbers and I don't want to listen to numbers when I'm listening to a hockey show. So here's how you can easily quantify this. 95% of those people holding NFT collections, virtually 23 million, mm-hmm. 23 million people holding them have worthless investments now.
Yeah. The thousands of dollars, the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands is now gone.
95%.
Y'all got scammed.
That's ridiculous. Ridiculous how many people got ripped off. Anyway, I'm not going to say that too loudly, but here's the next part, though. The report revealed that 79% of all NFT collections, so again, basically 4 out of every 5 NFT collection, have remained unsold, as there's not enough demand to keep up with the supply in what researchers have described as a highly speculative and volatile market.
Yeah, because people are still coming out with NFT collections. They're just flood. The market is flooded with these AI-generated pieces of art that are all slight variations that they make up these weird, dumb stories about exclusivity of different like components. Like, my ape has 3 eyes. Yours only has 2. Yeah, mine's rare.
So yours is rare, exactly. So remember, that's 79% of all NFT collections that they know about. The report also revealed that the number of dead NFTs could be even higher.
Yeah, and that means like the NFT doesn't link to anything because you're not actually owning a JPEG. You're owning a URL that leads to a JPEG.
It's not even a URL. It's legitimately just a chain that says, I bought a chunk of this picture.
Yeah.
It's not even a URL. It's legitimately just a fake money holder in a digital wallet. Mm-hmm. And that's the part I don't get is people were like so gaga over this. And I'm like, people are idiots. This isn't going to be worth anything.
People got caught up in the hype of this crazy thing that everyone was so excited about. And
do you want to hear about crazy? Because here's crazy for you.
Yep.
The study also analyzed the costly environmental impact surrounding the minting process of NFTs. So for those that don't know, there's a required effort that it takes to sort of house and generate all this fake art and do all the transactions and all that.
You're
kind
constantly
of stuff.
Doing like complex calculations. Correct. to verify the blockchain and all of that. And that's 24/7. That's constantly running.
Researchers identified 195,699 NFT collections. So nearly 196,000 collections. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now again, that's already bigger than the 79% of collections they know of, but whatever. But they researched and identified nearly 196 NFT collections with no apparent owners or market share. These are all dead NFTs. Mm-hmm. And found that the energy required to mint the NFTs was comparable to 27,789,258 kilowatt hours, resulting in an emission of approximately 16,243 metric tons of carbon dioxide. Now, again, people are going to go, those are massive numbers and they mean nothing to me. I don't know what that means.
Yep.
Here's some context for you, okay? The report, in terms of looking at that number, that 16,243 metric tons of carbon dioxide, because that's what matters in the real world.
Yep.
That's what's going into the atmosphere in terms of hot air going basically
speeding up climate change.
Right.
And
you know, the whole greenhouse gases and global change and all that, global climate change and all that.
Yep.
So again, the report revealed that the 16,243 metric tons of carbon dioxide is equivalent, okay, here's the equivalencies, is equivalent to the yearly emissions of 2,048 homes.
Yep.
That's a small town.
Yeah. It's like you took the town of Gimli and you doubled it.
It's also equivalent to the yearly emissions of 3,531 cars, or the carbon footprint of 4,061 passengers flying from London to Wellington, New Zealand.
One of the longest flights in the world.
And you're taking double the amount of people that live in those homes.
Yeah. Like
those 2,000 homes.
It's ridiculous. It's... Like,
and these are the worthless ones. These are the ones that have no value.
Exactly. That's not counting all of the ones that exist. That's not in counting all of the cryptocurrency, all of the dumb coins that people like Logan Paul come up with. That's not counting that entire market. That's not counting all of the transactions that are being done.
Okay, so if you're the NHL now and your whole thing is to use the Addy Zero and the climate change arena in Seattle and get, you know, greener environments, we're going to start using electric Zambonis in terms of having, you know, electrically powered Zambonis instead of having, you know, the diesel powered. If you're all about the NHL and you're telling people that, hey, we're doing good by doing all this great environmental stuff, and you turn around and you pull out this crap, You've shot yourself in the foot twice.
No, it's because some venture capitalist walked into the NHL office with a fancy PowerPoint deck and told Gary Bettman, hey, you're going to make billions of dollars in the NFT space. And Gary said, yes, please.
But why would you follow through 3 years after the market crashed? Like, I mean, the market crashed in 2021, basically.
Because they've been, it's the NHL, they're slow as molasses on everything.
Right, but if the market's already crashed and nobody's buying, why are you still trying to push this?
Because they sunk so much money into it. Gary was promised $2 billion. He's going to get his $2 billion.
This is absolute ignorance and corporate greed all over again.
It's just the stupidest idea. You should have never gotten into this. First off, the NBA was way faster than you.
Well, there was a whole bunch of leagues and organizations that were faster.
Yeah, they got in on it, and then they realized, yeah, this is kind of dumb, and they got out of it.
No, we weren't going to get into it in 3 years after the fact. to me, if you're going to go ahead and do this, by all means, have fun with it, NHL, but do not push it. Do not. You can put it out there and have a little link on your website, but if you refer anybody to this, you deserve to be shot. Because this is ridiculous.
Yeah. You...
This I would hope, and I'm not saying it will, because the NHL is a massive global business, but this is the kind of thing that I would hope would sink the NHL, would put them under, would bankrupt the company.
I want
because
to
this
know...
is the kind of stupidity that where tech bros go, hey, look what we did.
Sam Bankman-Fried? I want to know how much money the NHL lost on this. How much did they pay to get this done that they are continuing to try and make their money back? They're trying to get a return on their investment because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and just write it off. You got accountants that can turn this into a positive for you. Write it off. It's done.
No, Gary doesn't lose.
It's like the comic book things they did like a few, you know, 6 years, 7 years back when they made every team into a comic book character and then never did anything with them.
Yeah.
Like those, I could understand if they were one of a kind, you can make those into
make a thing.
A physical artwork and sell those.
Hockey cards
are a physical thing. Tops has an NFT program though. Tops has one though.
But there's that's a slightly different thing. But they, like, physical hockey cards. We had a conversation about, like, the hockey card market and stuff and the thing I was at this week. But, like, the trading card market and all of that stuff. You already have the physical version of NFTs, and you've been doing it for 40 years.
But again, this
why are you doing this?
Because again, people are, the NHL thinks that they're going to be cool and hip and get in with the, you know, the tech bro crowd, and away we go. But no, nobody cares about the tech bro crowd. Play hockey.
You want to get in with the tech bro crowd? Put a team in San Francisco.
Play hockey. That's all you got to do. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And combine that with the NHL, the new NHL stat site that doesn't work at all. Like, this is brutal. This is brutal for the fan experience.
I'm not using it. I'm sticking with Hockey Reference and Money Puck, and you can't tell me otherwise.
There's nothing good about the NHL, and that's all I can say about that. It's disgusting, but whatever. I mean, that's how a $1 billion company works. They can do whatever they want, I guess, and spend whatever kind of money they want. So whatever. Just staggering stupidity that we have running this league, but whatever. The other big news, I guess, that happened this week is that the PWHL decided to kick off their training camps yesterday. Today's day two. On Tuesday, they decided to try and introduce their six teams as best they could with very little success, because I'm not quite excited about introducing colors to people when there should be introductions of team names and identities that these teams are going to have.
Looking at what you're bringing up, there was so much hope when this started, because it looked like, okay, they've done their research and they're doing it right. And they're doing so many things with tons of planning. They've been working on it really hard and they're doing it at the right time. But this whole fiasco, I guess you could say, with the team names and the jerseys and the colors, it feels like they were rushing to get this done.
No, they are rushing.
Like, this should have been something that you had when you knew that you were doing this. You should have had these identities baked a long time ago.
The moment the CBA was signed, this should have started. This process should have started.
The moment you knew what cities you were going to be.
It didn't even matter the cities. Just get the team names ready and then attach them to a city when you get the city.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Get the logos made up. Let's just go with this.
Yeah.
But we didn't do that. And again, I'll say this. I don't have a problem with the PWHL having their stars come out and talk about how it doesn't matter about you know, the team name, the logo, and the jersey, what people think, because it's all about the market. They want to try and grow the game within those markets. But those markets don't need help. Minnesota's already got a strong women's hockey program, strong women's hockey presence. Mm-hmm. Boston does as well. New York does as well. New York's going to be Connecticut, it sounds like, which is stupid. Yeah. But that's just me, but whatever. Montreal, Toronto, and Ottawa all have strong again, women's hockey markets already.
Yeah, you're not growing anything.
You can talk about how you want to grow the game within the market, and I get that. Like, GM should go out and find the best players they can in order to build a winning tradition. That's what sells tickets to get people to come to your game. People want to cheer for a winning hockey team.
Yeah.
But again, merchandise now is almost as much about fashion as it is about function when it comes to associating with a good team. We were talking about it before the show. I'm not a Penguins fan because I like the 1984 Pittsburgh Penguins. They were awful. They were brutal.
Yeah.
They're terrible. But I loved that logo that they wore because it was a little skating penguin.
Yeah.
Like, that was my whole thing. That's why I got interested in the Penguins. And then they drafted Lemieux, and obviously things changed. Yeah. But the same thing, I mean, you were saying the same thing.
I was a Chicago Blackhawks fan growing up when I started playing hockey, because I liked Eric Daze. And I thought the logo and the jersey were really cool.
His name I haven't heard for a while.
Exactly.
Nice.
I have my childhood, like my first
year. He was fantastic in some of the NHL games too. Yeah.
Exactly. He was a great player. But the team was brutal.
Yes, they were.
And I still like the team because, like, the logo and like the jersey are really cool.
So here's the proof. And again, for people that are gonna go, whatever, like they're gonna do fine. Mm-hmm. Here's the proof though that how it matters what you have. Seattle Kraken set jersey sale records for a newly released jersey in its first 5 days of availability in 2021, okay? Mm-hmm. They announced the name, they announced the information, they brought out the jersey, and people went nuts for it, okay? Yep. So again, this isn't a brand new trend. We're going to go over a couple of these. In 2018 and 2019, the Vegas Golden Knights had sold the most jerseys in the NHL, according to CMO Brian Killingsworth, in back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. They were the brand new thing on the block. They were 2018, 2019. They were the only new team that we were talking about. Yep. And everybody wanted a jersey because they were the brand new thing. When the San Jose Sharks entered the league in 1991, they led the entire 22-team league in merchandising by a wide margin.
Yep.
Because, again, nobody had seen this teal color in hockey before. Oh, my God, it's so cool. I want to be part of that. Again, and I'll say this again, only because, again, it needs to be said. When the Minnesota Wild, again, you think about the Wild, you're going, okay, it's not a great thing. When the Minnesota Wild debuted in 2001, they had the league's best-selling team jersey and ranked second in merchandise sales. That's the Minnesota Wild.
When the Vegas Golden Knights finally settled on the name and the logo, the first thing I did was I bought a hat because I was like, I want to wear that.
But again, this is what I'm saying is that the logos matter. And for the PWHL to completely ignore that, it blows me away that we don't have a team name or a logo for any team yet. Yeah. I get that the Ottawa team was trying to working on becoming the Alert, which should be the Alerts, pluralized. But again, we can talk about whatever that a little bit later, though. So my thing is this, to be fair, and again, if this is what the PWHL is doing now with these markets, because maybe this is a better idea, although they should be honest about this and not skirt around what they're trying to do. But if your goal as a league, PWHL in the first year said they're going to run all the teams. Second year, they're going to say they're going to open up the bidding for anybody that wants to join the league, right?
Yep.
If you don't have a team name for an Ottawa or a Toronto or a New York, and somebody wants to buy that team, would it not be easier for them to brand it themselves?
Yes.
So if this is your goal, is to just play under market names this year because we're just going to get this league up and running and then we're going to start selling off teams, would that not be a wise move to do? To go, we have an established team, you can name it whatever you want, go. See, again, you're going to go, yeah, but. And I'm not denying there's a yeah, but in there. But the issue becomes, if I had a team, again, like the Montreal Echo, and I bought Montreal, you better damn well believe I'm changing that name the moment I buy it.
Like, for me, it feels like a minimum viable product approach. If you're not going to go full out and have the team names, identities, logos, colors, different jersey styles,
Well, the jersey styles were a little bit different. They weren't a lot different, but a little bit different.
Yeah. But, like, you're going for it. We have to get it up and running. It's not about doing it right. It's not about, like, knocking it out of the park. It's about getting it up and running and going in the market first. I can see it, but it's like you've had so long to come up with it. Like, was it that?
But again, you don't need names like Marie-Philippe Poulin and Hillary Knight and Natalie Spooner and Abby Rock and Sarah Nurse and Brianne Jenner to put butts in seats. The hardcore hockey fans who are fans of women's hockey are going to come and cheer those players on, regardless of what color and what logo they're wearing. It's the other fans, the casual, I want to go and check this out, I don't know anything about this team, oh my God, they have a cool logo, people, that will come to those games and start cheering for those teams if they have an identity they can adhere to. And right now, there is no identity for these teams.
You know what was the fun thing about when the CEBL launched in Canada? There was a team called the Saskatchewan Rattlers.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, that is rad. Look
at the Saskatoon baseball team that's coming in, the Saskatoon Berries.
Yeah. Or like the CP, like the coolest thing for the CPL was learning what cities they were going to be in, what the brands were going to be, with the names, the logos, the identity. And when I was on the field when Valor FC unveiled their logo and all of that stuff, and I was like, oh, this is a great experience. And there were tons of kids and tons of people that are like, oh my God, and we all got like the scarves and stuff with the logo on it. I'm like, this is like a great experience.
But again, I look at that and people were all against the Saskatoon Berries name when they first proposed it. And then they brought out that logo and everybody was like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be fun. The logos matter so much.
Well, with the
Your graphical branding. They matter.
Like, I talked about it because I was working with a lot of people who were working with people from across the country. And I was like, yeah, we have a basketball team now called the Winnipeg Sea Bears. And they're like, the Winnipeg Sea Bears? And I showed them the logo and they're all like, that's so cool.
But that's the thing, though, is I legitimately don't understand how a league can and again, I understand this is for the players. The players are gonna make good money.
Yeah.
I'm happy for them. Don't get me wrong. This should have happened long ago in my view.
Yeah.
But again, if you want this league to be profitable, you need to start churning some sort of profit. And I'm not buying a shirt that just says Ottawa diagonally on it.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care about those six markets because it's not my market.
Yeah.
I don't care about who's playing in those six markets. I mean, I kind of do, but I don't really care about who's playing in those six markets because the markets don't have an identity to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a fan of Toronto just because I hate Toronto. I mean, I'm not, again, anybody but Toronto in terms of our view here on the show. But I could be a Toronto fan if they came out with a killer logo for that Toronto women's team.
Like, but that's the thing, right? Like, you're banking on, you're not, if you were to have a full identity, you could sell to everybody across the country.
Okay, do you want to know the most popular logos in sports in terms of what goes on? Yankees?
Yep.
Maple Leafs, Canadians in terms of Bruins a little bit more in terms of what they've gone on as well. Blackhawks in terms of different hockey teams or whatever. Green Bay Packers, Dallas Cowboys. All of those are long-term, like they've been around for a long, long time.
Yep.
And all of them have logos that were adopted by people in other cities. So when for example, when the Jets play Toronto, half the rink is Toronto Maple Leafs fans.
Yeah.
Why? Because that's what they grew up on. They grew up on Toronto when it was a 16 league, and that's the team they love.
Yeah. The number of
this
people.
This is where it gets important to be a Maple Leafs fan, because if you can wear a hat or a jersey or whatever of that team, it matters to fans. It matters to the hardcore fan to go, I'm part of that. I'm part of that team.
I have a McLaren F1 sweater that I wear on race days because I picked that team.
Right.
It's not the woking, you know, Formula One racing team. It's McLaren F1.
And it carries legitimately some panache in terms of its name. Like when you go McLaren F1, people go, oh, I know. Okay, yeah. Like they've been around forever.
Senna,
they've
Lewis won. Hamilton.
They've won a bunch of championships. They're like that, McLaren's a big name. I get it.
Yeah. You say, you know, Mercedes AMG Formula One team. You're
right.
Like, yeah. Lewis Hamilton, Toto Wolff, 7 straight constructors' championships.
But this is the thing, is that you don't even need to mention it. You go McLaren and people know what McLaren is on the street because McLaren. Again, they've got great, they've got high performance automobiles.
You don't
know what it is.
You don't see a McLaren very often, but you know what it is.
Right. And that's the whole point. Its branding is bigger than what it actually is now.
Yeah.
This is exactly what the PWHL seems to be missing.
This is also a fight that I'm having at work. I'm like, yeah, we need to like explore other branding opportunities. I'm wearing a Tim Hortons sweater right now.
But again, like you mentioned, the same thing, like Ferrari's the same way in terms of what they, how many Ferraris are there in Winnipeg? Probably none, but everybody knows what that name is. Okay, there's two, but everybody knows what the Ferrari name stands for.
Exactly.
And that's the thing, is I legitimately don't understand how you can miss the target so wide on this. Like Buffalo Bills fans saw a kick go wide. This is even wider.
Yeah. Like it's, You're not reaching anybody outside of those markets. And also, for the New York team, it's not even the New York market.
No, you're playing it. You're starting in Connecticut anyway, yeah.
Give them an identity to rally around.
But again,
before you came out with all the announcements, you should have been doing focus group testing and understanding what are cool names, what are cool brands, what are great things. Why, like, what are really cool things that can be? Do you think that, you know, when they came up with the Winnipeg Sea Bears, like, a week before, you know, they tipped off for the first time? No, they've been doing it for months. They've done a bunch of focus group testing and a bunch of research, and they just, like, you come up with these identities that are going to be ubiquitous that you want people wearing. Like,
but again, you
see somebody walking down the street with a Toronto hat on. That's just Toronto written across a hat. You're just going to think like, oh yeah, that person's like, they just have a hat for the city of Toronto. You're not going to think about the PWHL team.
Like, but the question becomes though, is how do you market this now?
Yeah.
Because I'm not cheering for Team Ottawa. I don't give a crap about Team Ottawa. Sure. The players on that team might be fun, but I have no allegiance to Ottawa whatsoever.
Yeah. Give me something I can latch on to.
I mean, I like Carla McLeod. I think she's a great coach. But I'm not cheering for Ottawa because Carla's the coach. Give me something that I can actually go, I want to be part of that. I want to be part of that team. They have a great logo. That I love supporting them.
I became an Edinburgh Capitals fan because I was like, that's a sick logo and a sick jersey. I like this team. They're awful, but I like them.
But I mean, again, this is the part where I just go, you can't miss the target this poorly and expect to do well.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to bring down the PWHL. I am a huge proponent for women's professional hockey. I really want to see this do well, but you cannot miss the target like this.
Do you think that if those patented names that came out were well received, we would be having this conversation?
No. Yes and no. And I'll say that yes, because I still don't feel like there's enough time for them to get logos, proper logos made up for these teams. Because again, how do you graphically represent an echo?
I think the fact that they had gotten to the level of like patenting them,
right,
was they were far enough in the conversations about these names that they were willing to take the time to get the patent and have it in the background.
But we've
they
seen,
could use it.
But we've seen teams patent names before just to hold a placeholder for teams as well, right? Like, I mean, it's happened a couple of times where we've seen, like, the Kraken, for example, had patented a bunch of different names in a bunch of different trademarks in order to throw people off what the real name was that they were actually trying to patent at that point. Again, could be the same thing with what went on in the PWHL here. Maybe they actually had a different sort of idea for names. I can't expect that a league that legitimately is owned by Stan Kasten, mm-hmm. would be okay with the Toronto Torches and the Montreal Echo and the New York Sound when he has one of the oldest and most historic teams that he owns that he's legitimately working for in the Los Angeles Dodgers playing baseball. Like, I can't. That just does not go... A to B does not go well on that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is... These identities is one... They are... one of the cornerstone pieces to launching this league.
Right, they should be.
Like, when was the last time a professional league started when none of the teams had names? None of the teams had identities.
I can't think of any, to be honest.
The last time...
I can't. There's not one that I can think of.
Way back in the day, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers aren't actually the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They're the Winnipeg Football Club. But that was in, like, the 1800s.
Well, but again, you can say the Montreal Canadiens didn't have a name either then, because they were the Club de Hockey Canadien. And again, I get where it comes from. I get where the name comes from now.
But, like, it's not something that happened.
Right.
Right? It was a thing that happened. It was like, oh, yeah, we're just, like, a bunch of guys that, like playing hockey together. Remember, from Toronto. We're the Toronto hockey team. Like...
But this is what I mean. Like, this is completely... You cannot miss the
mark. Manchester City. It's a bunch of guys playing soccer in Manchester.
But again, there's a name. They all have a name, though. Yeah. Like, the Wolves and the... And like, they all have different names in terms of what they're given. They may not use them colloquially like we do, like in terms of, like, oh, I went and watched, you know, the Jets and the Flames last night. Like, everybody knows, okay, you're talking about, you know, Calgary and Winnipeg at that point. Again, Manchester City against Manchester United is Man U and Man City. Like, everybody knows, just to shorten it at that point, right? They don't use the same team names that we do in hockey. But at the end of the day, if you mention Man U or Man City, people automatically, immediately know what you're talking about. It doesn't... There's an entire, like, iconography, there we go, iconography, that comes with being a Man City
or
Man
Liverpool.
U. Right.
People know, like, they know the colors, they know the name, they know.
But this is what I mean. Like, they're missing
bad team.
They're missing.
I'm a Man U fan. But it's been a bad year.
But in year one, though, I mean, you can't expect people to associate their name with the colors. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to do that again, and I have no problem with that. Again, the Boston Green, the Minnesota Purple, the New York Gray, the Montreal Maroon. The Toronto Blue and
the
Ottawa
Montreal
Red.
Maroon, like
the Maroons, Maroons, I get
those work for me.
Yeah, they
don't really know where the other ones come from.
Well, the gray, you can make a case for the Yankees. The purple in the Minnesota one, I have no idea. And the green in Boston is from the Celtics. Could be from the Celtics, which I get.
But again, like, Boston hockey is black and gold.
And if it's not, it's red and white in terms of Boston University, or it's crimson and or whatever color.
Crimson colored. And gold.
Yeah, for Boston College. Like, there aren't a lot of options there.
Yeah.
And again, the Harvard, who's in Cambridge, Harvard Crimson. Like, there aren't a lot of options you have for Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. But
there's also tons of great territory to mine for names.
But that's the thing, though, is I don't understand this, so... And again, credit to the players for coming out and saying it doesn't matter. We're here to represent the markets, and we want to grow the game in the markets. I get that. I get that's the goal. That's the entire goal of every team in every market. Don't get me wrong. But you don't need to keep reminding us that it's about the markets in year one. It's not about the markets in year one. It's about generating enough buzz that people are going to want to come back and see you again.
Yeah. We don't want it to be
And
like...
I, right now, I don't want to go see any of them. I have no interest in seeing them.
I have nothing to, aside from like watching certain players play.
That's what
the thing about, okay, take, you know, there's a lot of things we can say about the PHF, but the fact that I was excited to watch those games because like it felt like those teams had an identity.
But Team Scotiabank, Team Sonnet, Team had identities. They had colors and they had, technically they weren't really logos. They were just extensions of that branding's logo, but still it was a logo.
Yeah.
In the PWHPA. The PHF all had logos and branding. Mm-hmm. We get to the PWHL, which is supposed to be the greatest thing in women's hockey because it's the one league to conquer them all. Yep. And we have nothing. What the hell?
Like, tell me, you look at the Boston Pride and don't think, oh yeah, that's a Boston hockey team.
You look at the Boston Blades, who were the same colors as well.
That's a Boston hockey
team. It's a Boston hockey team. There's no question about that. I'm baffled by this. Baffled, to say the least. But we'll see how the PWHL does because training camps are underway and teams are. Apparently, there's already a preseason game that's planned between, if I'm not mistaken, between Ottawa and Boston somewhere. Somewhere that they're getting set up for in terms of playing this game. So, whatever. Anyway, Carolina Hurricanes are going to play a little Back to the Future in February as they're going to go as the Hartford Whalers again for one night. Except this time they're going to go full Whalers by bringing back the look worn by the team from 1982 as they go Cooperalls in the warm-up. Thoughts on what the Hurricanes are doing, Jay?
I love Cooperalls.
You might be the only guy.
Yes. I love them because they look so dumb and they are so impractical. They work if you play hockey outside, but I would love to see. You know what I would love to see? Carolina and Philly outside in the dead of winter. You have Hartford versus Philly. They're wearing Cooperalls. It is like quintessential hockey.
Okay, so you just said that. They play the Flyers on March 21st, and they're not the team that they're going to be facing that night. So they're going to be playing on February 10th, 2024 as Hartford Whalers night. The New Jersey Devils are the the visiting team. Now the Devils could wear the Christmas tree jerseys, the red and green, which would be fantastic. But again, if they could have done it March 2nd against the Winnipeg Jets, who wore Cooperalls for half of a season, mm-hmm. they could have done it the 21st against the Flyers, who wore Cooperalls for one season.
I forgot the Jets wore Cooperalls.
And the Nordiques. The Nordiques wore them as well. But, I mean, that's now we're going past Colorado's existence, so that's fine. But that's what I mean. Like, they could have legitimately had, like, a full Cooperalls, like, night if that they were going to do that. But we don't do that.
I also think, like, again, Carolina, can you relax for 5 minutes on bringing new jerseys in to sell them and make more money?
When the 6 red jerseys they have don't sell and the 4 black jerseys they don't sell, let's just bring back the Hartford Whalers.
Jeez.
And to be honest, the thing I don't like about the Whalers is that, I love the Whalers. I love the Whalers, and I think the Whalers logo is still fantastic. But the Hurricanes don't honor the Whalers.
No.
So why are they allowed? I get that they own the franchise rights to it, but why are they not enforced to bring back some of the legends from the Whalers days and make them sort of, you know, walk the carpet for them?
Because I'm assuming that the Whalers legends don't want anything to do with the Carolina Hurricanes.
But again, you have to wonder, Ron Francis would have no problem with it. He's been in and out of that Carolina Hurricanes organization a dozen times. I mean, I know he's working for Seattle now, but hey, bring him in. Brendan Shanahan's not doing anything. He was there for half a season.
Brendan Shanahan is running the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Paul Coffey, he was there for half a season. Bring
Paul
him
Coffey,
in.
Paul Coffey, he's running the Edmonton Oilers.
Sean Burke.
You know?
Like, there's a whole bunch of guys they could legitimately bring back and honor, but they don't ever do it. And I just go, you guys put on a great show.
It's a marketing opportunity.
Right. You guys put on a great show.
It's a way for Tom Dundon to make money.
That's exactly it. I despise it. So, speaking about making money, NHL is over in Sweden right now. What do you think of the Global Series in the middle of a season? Not to end a season. Middle of a season.
I think it's really weird because it messes with the schedule and it does a lot of things. I like it when it's at the start of the season, maybe a little bit early, like the Australia games.
Right, yeah.
I personally think, and I'm really happy. So the one thing that makes me really happy about the Global Series being in Sweden is that Swedish hockey players, when they retire, they tend to just go back to Sweden and disappear. I have not seen Nick Lidstrom's face since he retired. And seeing him with Alfredson at that press conference made me happy.
He's been running one of the Swedish teams down in Sweden for a long time now. So yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like Matt Sundin like disappeared. Marcus Naslund just kind of
Peter Forsberg.
Peter Forsberg just went back to Sweden and disappeared. So it's nice that having these games and events in Sweden brings those guys out and we can see them again and really revisit those memories. I just think the NHL is wasting so much time and money on a market that already loves hockey.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I have no issues with the League One and League games at any point because, again, they already give out points for the Winter Classic, the Stadium Series.
Yeah, that's fine.
Whatever. If you're going to go to Sweden and
it's
do
one
that,
game, whatever.
Yeah, you're going to, well, it's two games technically for each team, but for the four teams that are going over there. So Detroit and Ottawa played earlier today. Ottawa won 5-4 on a goal by Tim Stützle with 2 seconds left. He batted it out of the air and into the net. So good game as after Ottawa coughed up a 4-goal lead. They were 4-0 and Detroit rallied back. Toronto and Minnesota will also play over there. For those that don't know, there'll be mid-afternoon games tomorrow. There's also a Sunday game on on the NHL Network and I believe on Sportsnet that starts at 7 a.m. Central Time between the Maple Leafs and the Wild. But again, I'm with you. I don't think Sweden needs a global series when, for example, we talked about it earlier in this year, like Norway is dying right now. Their hockey program is dying because they can't afford to keep it on the ice. Why not go to Norway and help them raise money? It's right next door.
You know, why not go to England?
Well, again,
they have rinks where the NHL has played before.
But jump into France? I mean, you got a bunch of guys that are coming out of France that have played there. Again, you don't need to go to Germany. You don't need to go to the Czech Republic or Czechia or whatever or Slovakia. But why not any of the other, like, again, go to Slovenia, go to Italy, go to Kazakhstan, go to
Spain.
These places where you legitimately, and again, I know that there's some issues with the KHL and the NHL crossing over and stuff. Like, I get that. But Spain would be fantastic. Again, you were talking earlier, why not go south? Why not go to South America? Why not go to Central America? Colombia and Argentina just played in the Women's Development Cup for the IIHF Women's Development Cup. Colombia beat Argentina in the final. Again, just those names alone. Colombia beat Argentina in hockey.
Yeah.
Like that's never heard of.
Like you go to Argentina, go to Brazil, go to Colombia, go to Mexico. Like the NFL and NBA have been talking for so long about playing games in Mexico.
Mexico has a growing hockey population
exactly.
as well.
And the great thing is it's not going to change
and
the time zones.
Dallas has already said they want to go down there.
Exactly. Play games in Mexico, you're not changing time zones, so it's the same time for fans. It's the same time for, the NHL doesn't have to worry
about. You'll probably get more fans to an Arizona Dallas game than you would in Arizona.
Yeah, like imagine that.
Just put all of Arizona's home games in Mexico City. We're good.
Exactly. So like, there are markets where you can if you care about growing the game and not just making money. Which obviously this is
we're talking the NHL though.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Like do the thing. Do the right, like if you want long-term growth and longevity, go to markets where hockey isn't that big.
I agree with you 100% and I wish the NHL would get their heads out of their rear ends, but hey, it's NHL, it's run by lawyers, so what do we know? Do you want the sad news or do you want the fun news before we go on? Cuz it's one or the other. There will be a little bit of sad news, but there also will be a little bit of there's going to be a lot of fun news.
Let's get the sad news out of the
way. Okay, sad news first, and this will be quick and painless. Well, it's not painless, but whatever. Western University, we've covered that saga last couple of weeks in terms of what's going on with Candace Moxley, the head coach, and the women's hockey team there. As per Rick Westhead via Twitter, quote, "The parent of a Western University women's hockey team player filed a Freedom of Information request with the school in an effort to obtain staff emails and a final report related to that misconduct investigation that was conducted by the university. Western, as we know, has refused to produce the report. However, the parent was forced to drop their Freedom of Information request for staff emails after Western said processing the request would cost an estimated $1,675. What on earth would cost them $1,600 to get emails off a server?
Protecting their butts.
But again, it's not Freedom of Information then. It's extortion of
yes.
information.
It is. You're throwing up a financial barrier to stop somebody from exercising their rights as a Canadian. Because that is a publicly funded institution.
Right.
We have a right as Canadians to know where our money is going and what it's being used for and what's going on. They have a right to have access to that for this reason.
So again, this is a parent of a Western University women's hockey team player that wanted this information, and they were denied because they cost. It could because of cost.
Yes,
that's unfathomable. Unfathomable.
Burn the whole institution to the ground.
Also brought forth by Rick Westhead with this week, Hockey Canada says the three-member panel has reached a decision on sanctions regarding allegations involving members of the 2018 World Junior Team. Mm-hmm. So finally, we're going to get to the bottom of this, right? No. The panel was provided with the Hennin Hutchinson Robitaille LLP's investigative findings on which they ruled. However, the panel's decision is now being appealed.
Yep.
Hockey Canada has maintained it consulted with London, Ontario police to ensure the announcing of the development would not affect the criminal investigation. Apparently it won't. The World Juniors appeal will be heard by a three-member panel of extensive legal experience, Hockey Canada told Westhead, adding there is no timeline on the appeal process, which means this could go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
They also declined to identify members of the appeals panel. Oh, we're not going to tell you who's going to sit on that either.
So you've already ruled that you're giving them sanctions because they're not appealing if there's no sanctions.
Correct.
Right? If they ruled in favor of the players, there would be no appeal happening. So obviously you're punishing them.
Right.
Why do you care about protecting their identities when you are punishing them?
Okay, so if the players' appeal is unsuccessful, Hockey Canada will likely name names and make their sanctions public, regardless of whether the police in London, Ontario announced criminal charges, the lawyer told Westhead after he consulted lawyers to find out exactly what was going on. However, here's the weird part. Documents filed in court in October 2022 indicated that London police believed that there was reasonable grounds to charge five players of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, police have repeatedly said the investigation remains active, but have declined to elaborate. So if you have reasonable grounds to charge five players of sexual assault and you haven't, mm-hmm. what the hell are you doing? Everything in London, Ontario is completely backwards from the way that any sort of
yep.
logic would dictate how the law should go.
Yep.
Like, if we want the Old West, this is exactly the Old West out in
it's
Western.
It's a
Western in London.
Bunch of rich people protecting each other.
I guess. It's just madness. Okay, let's get to the announcements, because the announcements are going to be fun, and these are going to be the great part. So, first thing that you need to know, UMFM has had a long, long history of supporting minor hockey in this city in terms of mm-hmm. you know finding great programs to sort of tag along with and promote and help out.
Yep.
We're going to do it again this year. The Female World Sports School Challenge returns to the Hockey for All Center January 25th, 28th. And we will be back broadcasting all 4 days of action from Hockey for All Center in one of the rinks.
Yeah.
Once again, covering as many games as possible for the Female World Sports School Challenge, which is hosted by St. Mary's Academy. So we are happy to do
Woo!
That. We got the okay on that in terms of sitting down with St. Mary's. They agreed to it. We agreed to it. And we're going to do it again, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Secondly, we're going to play this commercial here because I think this is awesome. Kendra Zuhotsky from the Saskatchewan Huskies did a quick sort of piece on nationals that are going on mm-hmm. March 14th to 17th. U Sports National Women's Hockey Championship will take place in Saskatoon. So I'm going to play this right now. You're going to be able to hear it. This is Kendra Zuhotsky, one of the a defender for the women's hockey team, talking about how important this is for women's hockey in the region.
It's really important for us to showcase this national championship here because we do a lot of work with female hockey. Like, I know when I was growing up, I didn't have female hockey players to look up to. I played boys hockey, and just where I'm from, there isn't girls hockey around there. So moving into the city and seeing all these young girls who have the chance to witness older female hockey players play, and they have something to look up to in the future, and if they want to, and I think that's really important for us to bring the national championship here because it's a different caliber of hockey. And I know, like, a couple of years ago when we were in PEI and the energy in that atmosphere, when we play here, the fans here are incredible. And for us to bring the top eight teams in Saskatoon, to have female girls, like, just be able to see what it's like to play at a professional level. And I think that's incredible.
And that's the thing. It's as close to professional as a lot of these girls are going to get in terms of being able to play at that level. Hugely, hugely popular tournament. You and I know from going both to PEI and to London in terms of watching the Bison's team play there. I mean, obviously, it's a different sort of atmosphere, different sort of setup, because yeah. everybody is ramped up to the max at that mm-hmm. point. But the good news is that I'm going to make the pilgrimage out there in March. I've decided to make the appropriate sort of set up and get everything sort of going. I'm going to volunteer out there at the tournament.
Awesome.
They're looking for volunteers, so I'm going to go out there. I'm going to give a hand. But that also means that the hockey show will be broadcast from Nationals on March 14th that night. Nice. We'll do a little radio show from Saskatoon, and we'll make sure everybody gets up to date on what's going on around that tournament and what to expect for the rest of the week. We'll have on some guests and stuff like that as well. So fun that way. We're happy to bring both the Female World Sports School Challenge, and there's still at least two more announcements we haven't been able to break yet. One will be coming up at the end of the month. We'll do one at the end of the month because that's when I believe everything's going to be sorted out for that one. The next one will happen sometime probably in December. So,
awesome.
But we are going to be involved with even more stuff coming up. So hockey show is going to be busy for the next little bit here in terms of what's going on. You might have heard last week we brought out our first Melbourne moment.
Oh, yes.
It was all about a Christmas ham calico bag in Kmart. And you might go, you know what? The hockey show's never really on the cutting edge. They don't talk. They sort of talk about everything that's happened during the week. We actually were ahead of the curve on this one.
Yep.
This is from HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, talking about legitimately the same thing that we talked about. Here's that clip.
Very tense right now, and it seems like everyone is finding themselves making mistakes. And I do mean everyone.
Meanwhile, Kmart has had to pull one of its Christmas items off the shelf because of its unfortunate wording. The shopping giant selling ham Christmas calico bags with the slogan Merry Hammas, which appears to be too similar to the name of the terrorist group Hamas.
Yeah, that is too similar. It'd be like naming your child John Blaine Gacy. It's too close for comfort.
So again, we are ahead of the curve on that one in terms of getting a jump on one of the big sort of comedy shows on that, which is kind of awesome in terms of seeing that. But in saying that, let's take a jump again because we're going to try and go two for two here. Mm-hmm. Here is your next Melbourne moment, and this one is all sorts of ridiculous. I'll jump in during one of the parts where they have a little bit of video going on, but I'll explain what's going on in the video. But this is the next Melbourne moment. I'm not going to set it up with anything because these guys do a great job setting it up. Here it is now. Here is your next Melbourne moment.
We have some sad news to report to you all at home this morning on the world record front. The record for the largest human mattress dominoes has been broken in the Philippines.
Oh,
it was set by mattress company Eurotex by 2,355 employees and charity representatives, and taking around 20 minutes to complete.
Okay, so they're showing video of people legitimately holding on to mattresses and having other people in mattresses like bump into them and knock them over like dominoes. So that's what human mattress dominoes are.
There you go. Now, the reason why this is devastating is because the first ever record for this was created by none other than us on the Today Show back in 2009. Check it out.
No way!
So they did that in their parking lot.
Yeah.
Just hear the madness going on.
Ridiculous.
They were happier times, that's for sure.
What is going on?
You can't do that these days.
I think that we shouldn't be too sad about this. I think we should take it in our stride and try to break it again.
At the Christmas party, maybe.
And I love how they left the plastic on the mattresses. So you can use them again.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I mean, the Guinness Book of World Records is just a farce now because of the records that they have in there. But, I mean, human mattress dominoes is a record that's in there, and it's now held in the Philippines. So
I love the... just how openly the co-hosts will just react on a hot mic to things that are going on, just like so genuinely.
I get a blast out of that. So big thanks to Nine
just
News.
What? No.
Big thanks to Nine News' Today Show again for that clip because that's awesome. And hey, maybe we'll have another clip that appears on This Week Tonight with John Oliver this week. So who knows? Anything you want to say before we get out of here, Jay? It's 6:30, just in a couple seconds here. So,
if anybody's in Selkirk on Saturday, I'm going to be at the holiday market at the Selkirk Rec Center, I believe it is.
The holiday market already?
Yes.
It's the middle of November, Jay. You're legitimately bringing back
there.
The song.
I'm going to be there hawking books.
All right. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Skippy for Earrings Radio. It's coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's been The Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
A Merry Christmas, Mother's Cup, and also Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Merry Kwanzaa, too.
There's no singing in it. North Pole.
Yes, there is.
No, it's not.
We sing all the time.
No, it's not.
Especially when we make toys.
You're listening to jolly old CJUM-FM, 101.5 megahertz in Winnipeg.